Buckmaster, along with my friend Bob Dio, Bob engineering and producing the show. Together we welcome you to Buckmaster on this Thursday, April 25th, 2019. I'm feeling lucky to be alive. Out in the garden last night, cutting some of those beautiful roses, Bob, that we have right now, and I did not see this giant rattlesnake. It was so close, maybe inches away.
Oh, my goodness.
And as I posted on my Facebook page, rattlesnake alert, urging everybody to be careful. And people have had just really great suggestions to my Facebook post about always make sure you see, don't reach in anywhere where you can't see, don't step anywhere where you can't see, but boy, oh boy, the rattlesnake season is in full bloom.
Shoo, you're lucky.
Yeah, very lucky. Feeling real lucky here on 1030 Tucson's Voice for trusted local news and talk, worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com. We make this really easy for people to hear our programs, all of our podcasts. They're available 24/7 at buckmastershow.com. Dr. Mark Stegeman is with me in studio, president of the TUSD Governing Board, and he uses our podcast service extensively. I know he's a busy man teaching over at the university, but Mark, good to see you, first of all.
Thank you, Bill. I feel lucky to be here.
Well, there you go. You do use the podcast a lot because something will be said about TUSD and you'd like to hear what was said on the show, and you go back and you check it out. And that's really what you did when we had Adelita Grijalva here in studio with Tim Steller of The Star and myself interviewing Adelita. You listened to the interview. There were a couple of things that kind of jumped out at you that were brought up about setting the agenda. I just wonder, what's the tone of the board right now? What's the feeling?
I think that overall, the tone has improved this year. I think that Layla Counts has been very professional in her, the way she conducts herself on the dais.
Is she very self-disciplined on the dais?
She's quite self-disciplined. I haven't agreed with all the votes, but the tone of the meetings has improved with her on the board. One concern I have is I think in some cases the board, of course this isn't new, this has been true for a long time, makes decisions too quickly. It's kind of impatient and rushes to votes on things, and sometimes turns out wasn't a very good idea.
Does the board chew up a lot of time, in your opinion, with non-education or symbolic items?
Well, we have quite a bit of that, and there's a certain amount of grandstanding, and there's a certain amount of board members going after each other. But I think those last two things have diminished a bit. In Tuesday's meeting, there was one item where there was really a lot of crazy stuff going on, but you know, and people making accusations and stuff. But
were they directed at you?
Well, to some extent, yes, that I was abusing my authority and so forth, and I really didn't think so. But on the whole, I want to say I think the tone of the board has improved since Layla got on it.
What about this?
And she is never the one doing that, I will say.
What about the flag issue? And that came up in the interview with Adelita. Do you consider yourself an advocate for Native Americans? And you were kind of painted as the bad guy about not allowing the Native Nations, our two Native Nation flags, their colors of the Yaqui Nation and the Tohono O'odham Nation, that those flags should be up on the dais.
I was happy for them to be displayed. The county supervisors allowed them to be displayed. It's common. I wasn't quite comfortable with the way that was going to be done, and that's why I voted against it. Well, Rachel Sedgwick proposed a compromise that I think would have got my vote. They didn't go for that compromise, and so I voted no. But I felt it was a relatively minor issue. After the vote, I invited the tribal leaders to come back and make a presentation when we install the flags and explain the flag significance.
Was that done?
We don't have the flags yet.
Oh, okay.
That'll probably be in May.
All right.
They'll install the flags and have a presentation. And I have historically, I think, been one of the biggest advocates on the board for Native American education. I strongly fought against closing the Ritchie School that served the old Pasqua neighborhood, and fought to have it reopened, actually, but there wasn't much support for that. So I think my record was a little bit misrepresented.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Mark Stegeman with us, president of the TUSD Governing Board. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. The budget is a serious issue. We're coming up on the fiscal year ending the end of June. There's all sorts of things on the table that need to be addressed. Teacher raises. How is TUSD even going to pay their bills for the new fiscal year? That's kind of the bottom line here. What kind of budget shape are we in?
Not very good. TUSD, partly because of its sustained enrollment decline, loses money every year. And so when we get more money from the state, and this year the state is going to be giving more money, we don't know exactly how much yet because the budget is still much under discussion up there. We end up using a good part of that money to fill a deficit. And we did that with Proposition 123, which was promised to the teachers. And then the board, I didn't agree with this, but decided to spend most of that money filling the deficit instead of on teacher raises. And I'm afraid that this year, where other districts are able to use the new monies to increase teacher compensation, we will increase teacher compensation, but I'm afraid we won't be keeping up.
How do you fill these hard to fill positions, some of these disciplines that are so in demand for teachers? These people are going to need signing bonuses or something like that, like in pro sports, to encourage, make the sweeter a deal to make them come to TUSD or encourage them to come to TUSD. How about thinking about that, thinking outside the box?
Well, I have fought for years for higher pay for hard-to-fill positions. And what does that mean? That means special education is probably number one. Math and science is also hard to fill. And there are certain schools that either because of circumstances at the school or because of where they are, on the outskirts of Tucson, are hard to fill. And I have advocated for compensating differential for those, and not just signing bonuses, but an increase in pay every single year. And one of the great news is, I think a big positive this year is that it's possible we will get that this year, that we will have a permanent stipend for special education teachers, for example, not just one year, but every year.
Where's that money come from?
That'll come out of maintenance and operations. That'll come out of our main budget. And it's difficult to do things like that, but I think that's just very, very important for us. And that would put us ahead of most other districts. A lot of districts have signing bonuses, but most districts do not pay these hard-to-fill positions more year after year. We're not there yet. Negotiations are still going on, but we might get there this year, and that would be a big win.
How's the Budget Audit Committee doing?
Well, the Audit Committee, I think, is doing very well. I think we have a very strong committee. There was a 3-2 vote recently to give the committee a charge, an assignment. These are all volunteers to figure out ways to make recommendations to improve the district's financial reporting and make it more transparent, both for the board and the public. And I worked with Layla Counts on that, and that was a great example of collaboration. The audit committee is having a meeting tomorrow, and I will deliver the charge to the committee, and I'm optimistic that we'll get some good recommendations out of that.
Is the board meeting enough, in your opinion? You schedule how many meetings per month?
Two is the norm.
Can you do more?
Well, this has been a point of contention. I don't think we have enough meetings, and I think it means that some things get considered too briefly and that we go too late at night when people, a lot of the bad decisions, I think, happen after 9 o'clock. And so I'd like to see more meetings.
Would you like to see a weekly meeting?
No, but I think that, especially in the spring, there's a lot more to do in the spring because you're doing negotiations, you're doing any policy changes for the fall. You're doing a lot of stuff to get ready for the next school year. I think that three meetings a month would be good in the spring, but I am not that is not the majority viewpoint on the board.
All right, we've got more to talk about with Dr. Mark Stegeman. Dr. Stegeman is the president of the TUSD Governing Board. He will be so. It's a 12-month term, is that correct?
Yes, but I said in January, I advocated a split six-month term, and the board wasn't able to come to consensus, so I was elected to a 12-month term, but I said that I would resign after 6 months to allow someone else to do it, and that is what I will do.
All right, 10:30, The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Dr. Stegeman, it's time to talk about Mona's Danish Bakery.
I always look forward to that, Bill.
I know you do, and I'm really excited. The launch was last week of the hot breakfast, and they've got the cooks in place now up there, and we sampled it. I wanted to sample the pancakes, the blueberry pancakes, and probably do the chocolate chip. That's something that sounds really encouraging to me to try that this weekend. I did the challah bread French toast. That was really good. And so this is a place that you can meet clients. You can. They're open at 6:30, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. They're open right now for lunch, but they're going to be doing breakfast all day. And so this is really nice. They got a great menu. The price point is really good. So check it out. Mona'sDanishBakery.com is their website. There's also a link at BuckmasterShow.com, not only to Mona's, but two dozen or so partners, people who really pay the bills that make this program possible. So we're very much thankful for them and keeping us strong and healthy as we are well into our ninth year on the radio. We'll be right back on Buckmaster. We're hitting now, coming up on 12:17 already. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. I'm passionate about travel, visiting over 100 countries in all 50 states. And when I'm ready to take off, I fly from Tucson International Airport. With 9 airlines flying nonstop to 22 destinations and easy one-stop connections, I can get virtually anywhere in the world. It's close by, convenient with competitive airfares, and there's no long drive coming back home after a long trip. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com. For the first time ever, explore the Biosphere 2 ocean and beach and see up close how we're using the world's largest indoor living ocean for research on the future of coral reefs and rising ocean temperatures. During this privately guided tour, you'll learn why our world's oceans are so important, why they're being impacted, and how the Biosphere 2 Research Center is addressing the global challenges of food, water, energy, and health. The University of Arizona Biosphere 2 tours daily, biosphere2.org. The Regional Transportation Authority has a 35-member Citizens Advisory Committee working to identify transportation priorities for the region and will be seeking public input on those priorities before too long. These priorities will help guide development of an RTA continuation plan. The current RTA plan and half-cent excise tax will continue through June 2026. To learn more, please visit rtamobility.com.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Every day, your safety and freedom is protected by the service and sacrifice of our first responders and military. Please join us in this community effort to build the Southern Arizona Veterans and First Responders Living Memorial, a place to celebrate those who have paid the price for our freedom and those who continue to defend it today. Help create a space where these memories, past, present, and future, will live forever. Learn more and donate by visiting vfrm.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Never a shortage of things to talk about, never a shortage of news. Tomorrow, we've got the police chief in studio, and my friend Tim Steller will be with me. Of course, one of the items that will be coming up is pedestrian crosswalks and these really, the spike we've had in pedestrian deaths. It's really been something. We'll hear what Chief Magnus has to say about that. But right now we have in studio the TUSD board president, Dr. Mark Stegeman. Covered a lot of ground in our first segment, and I do want to talk about a little bit about your sense of how this superintendent you've served under Dr. Fagan, Dr. Petticone, Dr. Sanchez, and now Dr. Trujillo. How's he doing?
I think on the whole, he's doing well. And I think that's why the board reappointed him on a unanimous vote. It's been a long time since a superintendent was reappointed unanimously. I especially give him credit for going, and I've said this before, going after the do not hire a practice, which was very pernicious, hurt a lot of people. And I've been concerned about that for years, and he was the first superintendent that was willing to go after it.
That was kind of that blacklist.
Yeah, that's it. That's it, the blacklist of 1,400 people.
That are kind of no-no with the district.
Well, yeah, and it, the part of the worst, I mean, the worst part about it maybe, or one of the worst parts, was it was secret, and people didn't even know if they were on the blacklist, and there was very little due process for how you got on the blacklist, and it was...
Where did that start? Do we know?
Well, they did the research, and I think it started back in the 1990s. But at first, it was a very small number of people.
Couple of names.
It was very short. And indeed, maybe there were reasons for those people to be on. Yeah. But then, as time went on, it just grew enormously, especially under some administrators, and became ridiculous. We're still one of my biggest priorities is to write policy, adopt policy that will prevent that from ever happening again. And we've been working on that since November, and we're still working on it. I'm hopeful that in the next, before the end of the school year, we will have some policy to adopt on do not hire. But it's complicated because there are trade-offs. You do want to protect families and students from some people who really shouldn't be hired. But I think we're going to be able to manage that and get rid of that institution.
Are there any layoffs in the offing? And what about the influence of seniority in if someone does have to be terminated? Is it usually the first hired that is asked to leave?
When it's someone who's covered by the teacher's contract, there's very strong seniority protections, and principals don't have much discretion. And that's been a problem for years. And I have fought to relax those rules for years and give principals more discretion. And although negotiations are still going on, I'm hopeful that this year we will finally make some progress on that. And that would be a big win, I think.
But there are no layoffs planned.
No, we're not. What the superintendent has been doing is not filling vacancies, not creating new positions. We have not been doing layoffs. I think, especially in central administration, some layoffs might be appropriate, but that has not been the route. He is getting rid of a few assistant principal positions, so I should correct that a little bit. There are a small number of positions being eliminated, but for the most part, we're reducing staff through not filling vacancies.
It's been many years since TUSD had new school buses on the streets.
Well, we have a very old fleet of school buses.
Yeah.
And there have been some replacements, but it is a very old fleet. And the settlement with Volkswagen.
What's that about?
Well, because of that massive fraud that Volkswagen. we could have a whole show about that episode, which is fascinating. But because of that massive fraud, they're paying a lot of money, and school districts all over the state are benefiting from a settlement, and TUSD is going to get quite a few new buses as a result of that settlement, and that's great.
Really? So some big money going to be thrown at...
it is some pretty big money, and I don't have the figure at hand, but it's going to buy a lot of buses.
So in the remaining 5 minutes, how would you characterize this district right now? How, is it still a very much a struggling district with the issue of enrollment? How do you characterize it?
I think that in various areas, and we've already mentioned a couple...
Yeah.
We're making progress under Dr. Trujillo, including progress on some things that have been issues for years and progress was not happening. But if you step back and look at the big picture and what TUSD needs to do to compete with our stronger charter school competitors, we have a long way to go. And it's no secret that I didn't vote for Trujillo on the first round of appointment.
Yeah, that's right. You didn't.
And it wasn't because I didn't like him, but it was because I thought TUSD needed a superintendent that was going to come in and really break some china, you know, really make some radical change. And that was not what Trujillo promised to do. I mean, that just wasn't the way he presented himself. And I thought we needed a radical change agent. But to his credit, he presented himself as more of a modest change agent, and I think he has done that.
Yeah.
I think he has been an effective change agent on various issues. And that's why I was happy to vote for his reappointment.
And we probably need to touch on, give it at least a minute or two, and the public still doesn't understand this ongoing, since 1970, the DSEG order. There's still so much confusion. It's one of the longest desegregation orders in the country. Most people have not a clue what it's about. What can I say? Or what can you say?
We changed our law firm 3 or 4 years ago.
Yeah.
And our new attorneys are aggressively trying to get out from under the whole thing.
Why?
Well, because it's a burden to the district, I think. Okay. I think for a long time, people suspected TUSD was happy to collect money.
Yeah.
And I think probably that was true.
It's like a cash cow.
It was a cash cow. And I think there's some truth to that. For a long time, before I was on the board, I think that started to change under Dr. Fagan. And I think now we are sincerely and seriously trying to get this thing ended. And I think we have a good chance.
If you do end it, you don't get money coming in, though, do you, from the
feds?
I don't know how much money it is, but I'd assume it's a lot.
It is a lot. It's about $63 million a year. It's about 15% of our budget.
Well, there you go.
But it is a popular misconception that the money goes away.
Mm-hmm.
And the way the statute is written, the money does not go away. There are between 15 and 20 other districts around the state collecting money, even though they have been released from their court orders, and it did not shut off their money. And we expect that our money would not be shut off under the current statute. But on the other hand, whether the legislature allows that to continue indefinitely is very much in doubt. And so my guess is that the money will at least be reduced at some point through legislative action.
All right. Well, overall, bottom line, you think it should go away.
Yeah, and I think the board as a whole feels that way. I mean, I think we're reasonably united on that at this point.
All right, Dr. Mark Stegeman, the president of the TUSD, Tucson Unified School District Governing Board, thank you very much. We'll let you get back over to the University of Arizona, where you are a specialist in economics, talking about game theory. That is your expertise. I won't even ask you about that right now because I don't have time for you to explain game theory.
Well, I've been teaching lately about the Fed.
The Fed's
been in the news a lot in my introductory classes.
Oh, very good. So we'll let you get back over to campus. Thank you very much for coming in.
Always a pleasure, Bill.
Thanks a lot. Before we go from this segment, I want to tell everybody that this portion of the program presented by one of our legacy sponsors. They've been around with us as we're now in our ninth year, Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Great bunch of people that run their tourism office over there. They want you to have a good time. That's the bottom line. They want me to tell you to take the 3-hour drive. Check out a beautiful area of the Land of Enchantment, a beautiful area of the southwestern United States. Dr. Stegman, we're going to open your mic up again, put you on the spot.
Oh, okay.
Have you been over to that area, southwestern United States and Silver City?
I actually have not, Bill.
Well, then you're who I am speaking to. Get some new people over there going over there. Everybody comes back and says the same thing. Great idea, Bill. I had a great time, great places to stay, and many wonderful recreation opportunities for the whole family.
I'll put that on the list with Mona's Danish Bakery.
Bakery, yes. Southwestnewmexico.org. Be right back. It's Buckmaster on 1030 The Voice.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. For the first time ever, explore the Biosphere 2 ocean and beach and see up close how we're using the world's largest indoor living ocean for research on the future of coral reefs and rising ocean temperatures. During this privately guided tour, you'll learn why our world's oceans are so important, why they're being impacted, and how the Biosphere 2 Research Center is addressing the global challenges of food, water, energy, and health. The University of Arizona Biosphere 2 tours daily, biosphere2.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Moa Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing.
And this is Bill Buckmaster. For several decades now, Mo has been my go-to expert for all my framing needs and bathroom mirrors. I trust Mo for service, professionalism, and top-of-the-line quality.
Thanks, Bill. Give us a call at 795-8226 and stop by Mo's Gallery and Fine Framing on the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge, right next to Copenhagen, and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Hey, it's Matt Russell from The Buckmaster Show.
And this is Ryan Hansen from Bon Voyage Travel.
I am so pumped to be partnering with Bon Voyage on my next culinary and cocktail cruise.
This is definitely a cruise for foodies as you experience the Mediterranean on celebrity cruises.
And the private excursions that your team has arranged for us? I mean, come on, an ouzo distillery tour in Greece? A food and wine day on Malta?
We'll handle everything, so all you and your guests need to do is eat, drink, and be happy.
Go to bvtravel.com/Matt Russell to learn more.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Time for our CEO interview series presented by Sun Corridor Incorporated, a transformative economic development organization representing one of the most dynamic and growing business centers in North America. Sun Corridor Inc. is a CEO-driven regional alliance whose members aggressively champion mega-regional issues that impact economic competitiveness and quality of life. The organization has helped to drive significant business investment into the Tucson and Southern Arizona region, region through primary job creation, resulting in an economic impact of $24.8 billion, with 162 company locates and expansions supporting nearly 48,000 jobs. For more information, visit suncorridorinc.com. Joining me on the live line, the CEO and general manager of the nonprofit, member-owned Trico Electric Cooperative, Vincent Natito. Vincent, how are you?
I'm very good. How are you? Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being on the program. Tell our listeners a little bit about Trico. What makes it different, Vincent, from other electric utilities in our area?
Sure. Well, Trico is what's known as an electric distribution cooperative. That makes us the local electric company for about 48,000 households and businesses around circling metropolitan Tucson. We were formed back in 1945 under the Rural Electrification Act. So under the REA Act, which was a New Deal legislation, it facilitated formation of local cooperatives to supply energy to rural areas. And Trico was formed in 1945 by a group of irrigators in the Marana-Avra Valley area. So we have since grown to about 48,000 households. The main difference between Trico and another type of electric utility is that we are member-owned, as you mentioned. We don't have shareholders. To the extent that we make margins in a given year, we pay those back to our members through capital credit allocations and retirements. So we're member-governed. We have a board of directors that consists of Trico members. We're also smaller than most utilities, most investor-owned utilities. We only have about 130 employees, but you know, we see that as more of as an advantage more than a disadvantage, because it allows us to keep our roots in the community and maintain interaction with the community. So we very much feel like we're part of the communities that we serve.
What is your footprint in our area? You mentioned Marana. What about other areas?
Well, we basically, as I mentioned, we circle the ring around metropolitan Tucson. So we serve as far northeast as Mount Lemmon, all the way up to Saddlebrook and Saddlebrook Ranch here in Marana, and then all the way south down to the Mexican border at Sasebe.
What's your big challenge right now in the electric business?
Well, I think it's keeping pace with the change that's going on. I've been in the electric business now for 30 years, and the pace of change that's occurring is really astounding, particularly with respect to the movement away from fossil-based fuels and coal toward renewable resources. We're seeing that continue to accelerate, particularly as the cost of renewables comes down and the efficiencies improve. So it's keeping pace with that. As a smaller utility, we can't necessarily take advantage of some of the economies of scale that are associated with doing larger renewable projects. So we manage that by doing smaller projects. We just completed a 10-megawatt solar facility out by the Marana Airport. I'd say it's keeping pace with that, and in that context, keeping our rates as low as we possibly can for our members, because we do serve rural areas and people tend to be demographically have more economic challenges in our rural areas.
How would you talk about, what is the price point? Are your rates competitive with, say, TEP, or what is that like, Vincent?
Our rates as a co-op, we're more dispersed than TEP, so our rates are slightly higher than TEP's. And the primary reason for that is that if you look at how a co-op is organized, we serve rural areas. Our population is more dispersed, so we have probably 10 member households per mile of line that we serve. A TEP has 50 or 60 per mile of line. So that's 50 or 60 people sharing the cost of that, as opposed to the 10 that we have. So structurally, cooperative cost structure tends to be a little bit higher than an investor-owned utility. The flip side is, though, that we do serve the rural areas that investor-owned utilities either can't or won't serve. So that's the trade-off that we have.
How are we doing now as we get ready to get into another very hot summer, Vincent? What's the distribution look like? Are we going to be able to meet those distribution needs this summer?
We will. That's something that we think about every year. We always stay ahead of that. We do resource planning, and we do planning on a yearly basis. We have just done several upgrades to our system to improve the ability to serve areas from multiple substations, so that if we have an issue with one, we can serve it from another. One of the challenges, again, as a co-op that we have is, you know, we have a very dispersed service territory. We serve over 2,300 square miles.
Wow!
So physically or demographically and structurally, we're larger in area than TEP is, but we have many, many fewer members, obviously. So when we think about summer preparedness, we make sure that we have contracts in place that can cover our what we're anticipating to be our maximum load. And then we have, as I mentioned, alternative backup arrangements so that if one substation or one circuit is taken out by a storm, we can serve it from other places. So we're in pretty good shape for this summer.
We're speaking with the Trico Electric Cooperative CEO, Vincent Natito, and Vincent's talking about Trico, and they've been around really since 1945. He's been in the energy business for about 30 years. Why did you get into that business anyway, Vincent?
Well, originally, I just wanted to move to Tucson. So I was an attorney back east in Connecticut for about 10 years, and we decided we wanted to move out to Tucson. Our sons at the time were young enough to relocate, so we picked a new place that we had liked, and I came out and started working for Tucson Electric Power. And then spent about 17 years with TEP. I ended up as their general counsel before I came here, and it's been a fun ride. We've had a lot of interesting times in the electric industry in Arizona.
Why do you like being associated with Sun Corridor Inc., Vincent?
Oh, it's you know the networking ability and the ability to talk to your peers and to know what's going on. It's just invaluable. The idea that you can reach out and talk to anyone in any area within Sun Corridor is a very positive benefit for us.
The whole thing about member-owned, that must make the people that are served by Trico at least feel like they've got some kind of voice. Is that correct?
I think, yes, that is correct, and we try really hard to reinforce that. We're constantly soliciting the input of our members. Whenever something, a big initiative occurs, we're reaching out to our members. As I mentioned, our board of directors is directly elected by the members at the annual meeting each year. So we really do feel like we have that tight connection to the community. We do a lot of scholarships and community donations and involvement. So we really try to be as public as we can within the areas that we serve.
You mentioned a very successful renewable energy program underway out by the Marana Airport. What's the big key initiative that you've got going here in the next couple of years as you're looking at your 2 to 5 year plan, Vincent?
I think it would be certainly the renewable portion of that, to continue the development of our renewable energy. We think that that's the way things are moving and are going to have to move if we're going to address global climate change, which we do think is an issue. So we're continuing to work on that, balanced against the cost of that to our membership. And because we, you know, as we move forward, we need to continue to have safe, reliable energy for our members. So we balance that against the need to include and continue building new resources. The other significant initiative we're doing is working with our members to take better advantage of their energy choices and to manage their energy better. There are all sorts of new technologies that allow you to make better use of your energy, things like Nest thermostats and battery technologies that allow you to move your load from the peak times to the off-peak times where the energy is cheaper. So we're continuing to work with our members on that.
That's going to save some money too for the members by doing some of those things, isn't it?
That's the idea. Yeah. The members should save, and the cooperative saves. And again, as because we're member owned, there's no one to pay the bills but the members. So it's
there. You go,
best interest. Yeah.
Vincent Natito. Thank you very much, Vincent. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Vincent Natito, CEO, General Manager, Trico Electric. For more information about our CEO interview series, you can visit Sun Corridor Inc., and that is the place to go to find out all that information about what they're doing at Sun Corridor Inc. So it's suncorridorinc.com. That is the website. All right, almost exactly 12:45 on the Buckmaster Show. Dr. Mark Sykes, CEO of the Tucson-based Planetary Science Institute, he's in the house. Are we going back to the moon anytime soon? We'll talk to Mark about that right after this.
Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. I love travel and flying from Tucson International Airport. And when you fly Tucson, you're standing up for Tucson. When more people fly Tucson, airlines respond with more flights. And with more flights, more travelers can get here to conduct important business. It's a win for the region, and it's a win for you in time saved and money saved not traveling to an airport 2 hours away. Travel smart and fly Tucson. Check out flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year transportation plan is funded through June 2026 by a special taxing district, which is a state-established political subdivision within Pima County. The RTA plan and half-cent excise tax were voter-approved in May 2006, and the tax is collected within the district. More about RTA Citizens Advisory Committee's efforts to develop an RTA continuation plan at rtamobility.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you're over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Green Things, one of our great sponsors, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Parks. Green Things, on a 13-acre site, not only your home for all the great gardening things that they carry, all the wonderful plants, but the merchandise from Zocalo is really special. That handmade merchandise from Mexico, places like Peru. Really nice items, some European items. Come tour the five shops at Zocalo Village at Green Things. They're ready for you right now. So stop by. If you want to check out the website before you go over there, greenthingsaz.com. Dr. Mark Sykes is here, CEO and director of the Planetary Science Institute, for more than 40 years, a Tucson-based nonprofit. engaged in the exploration of the solar system. He's the former chair of the NASA Small Bodies Assessment Group. We're not talking about small people. We're talking about small
asteroids, comets.
There you go.
You know, things like that.
How are you, sir?
I'm just fine.
People can find out more about Planetary Science Institute at psi.edu.
Yes.
I've actually wrote it down, so now I get it, so I don't give out some other crazy website for people. We're hearing all this stuff about going back to the moon.
Yeah.
Where do we begin?
Well, we begin with a speech by Vice President Pence, who announced in March that we'd be going back to the moon, boots on the ground by 2024, which is like 5 years from now. And now there's a lot of steps to get to that boots on the ground. One is getting the Orion capsule, which is the capsule supposed to take people up there, on the SLS, the Space Launch System, the big rocket that's been under development for a long time, but hasn't launched yet. And but they said, hey, if you're not going to be on time, then we'll go talk to SpaceX. So so that makes life a little interesting. Problem is that the systems can't get the Orion capsule to the moon, right?
Right.
And so they can get it up to they can't get it to lunar orbit. Mm-hmm. And so they have this thing called the Gateway, which they want to build, which will be in something called a near rectilinear halo orbit.
A near rectal
linear halo orbit. Okay. Yes, yes. Uh-huh. It's a real crazy looking thing it's an unstable orbit, and it doesn't get into lunar shadow because they don't want to get cold. And but it does reach out close enough to the Earth that Orion capsule can get there. Now they also need, so that has to be built and put into place. Then they also have to build a transfer vehicle to go from the Gateway to low lunar orbit. And then they have to build a lander and an ascent module to bring people back. So 5 years.
And may I say, as I like to do with Mark Sykes, there are no stupid questions, but you're going to get one, I guess, right now from the host of this radio show. Okay, we've been to the moon. We used the big rockets that they used to the moon. What was the
Saturn?
Okay, so
Saturn V. Yeah.
How is this particular vehicle different than the old Saturn V's from 1969?
No. It's in the ballpark. You know, it's in the ballpark, and it's the question is are we going there to stay? Are we going there to plant a flag or what? And they talk about sustainable presence on the moon, and Administrator Bridenstine before the House Science Committee a few weeks ago defined that as maintaining the capability to get down to the surface. So we're going to go down there once and then maintain the capability. And if we go down there again, I think it'll depend on, a lot of things will depend on the budget, and we haven't seen a budget for this yet. Mm-hmm. Now, the interesting thing is they want to go down to the South Pole and go to some areas where there's supposedly ice in some shadowed lunar craters. And then you use the ice for fuel and things like that. And it's also near a region of permanent sunshine. So you could set up a little solar power unit and it'd be always collecting sunlight. Uh-huh. So the location is interesting, particularly if you're interested in long-term stuff. And part of the motivation was not wanting the Chinese to get the high ground down there. And but whether there's what the strategic value is of having a permanent presence. I mean, personally, I like the idea, along with the National Space Society, of going back to the moon, but having a reason to stay and build and expand our human presence and economic
colonize, basically.
If that's possible, there's like I always say, there's homework that needs to be done, can humans develop in less than one gravity? Mm-hmm. That's unknown right now. But still, the moon's close enough that if there's some good reasons for maintaining people up there, then it would certainly be a great opportunity to take advantage of a presence to do a lot of great science, you know, build mm-hmm. radio telescopes on the far side of the moon. I was involved in the Space Exploration Initiative under H.W., George uh-huh. H.W. Bush, uh-huh. back around 90 or so, and mm-hmm. we designed a whole roadmap for the future of astronomy from the moon if we went back and stayed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So there's all sorts of possibilities about being on the moon and what we could do up there, right?
Right.
Have we mapped the moon very well?
Yes, down to about 7 meters resolution. We've mapped it. The Japanese have mapped it. The Chinese have mapped it. But the moon, it turns out, is dynamic. I mean, its surface does change. There's new craters that appear. There's some quake activity. There's venting of gases.
So they do have earthquakes.
They do have earthquakes. Huh. Yeah, moonquakes.
Wow.
So it's an interesting place. And
is it going to be a base for the Mars exploration, or could it or should it be?
Well, you'd have to convince me. Several administrations have said we'll go back to the moon this time to stay, then on to Mars, right?
Right.
But the moon is a gravity well, okay? So you got to use energy to get down to its surface and then use energy to get off of it. Mm-hmm. So if we were to use, say, if it's possible to cost-effectively develop near-Earth asteroids where we get the fuel from objects that are easier to get to than lunar orbit and can fill up a tank, you know, up in space— then that would be the perhaps more logical stepping stone to get from Earth to Mars. And back in 2004, under the Vision for Exploration under George W. Bush, PSI and Raytheon Missile Systems developed an architecture for going back to the moon, going on to Mars, but we were the only ones that developed this infrastructure involving utilization of water resources from near-Earth asteroids to see if Phobos and Deimos, the moons of Mars, are gas stations that we could use to get the fuel to come back to Earth so we don't have to haul everything out there. Mm-hmm. Again, there's a lot of really, really interesting homework to do. And with that in mind, I frankly would put nuns in charge of the whole thing because they'll make you do your homework.
So do you think 5 years is that possible?
It's possible. Mm-hmm. It's possible, but whether they'll get the budget to do it and whether they'll have the success in the development on a 5-year time scale to build 4 different or more craft that currently don't exist, mm-hmm. Test it and do it. That's another question. There's a lot of people that go, maybe not, but mm-hmm. but we'll see.
And the Chinese, where are they with their moon program?
Well, they're doing great. You know, they landed that spacecraft on the far side of the moon,
right.
And their engineering has been terrific, and they're planning on sending people to the moon, setting up some kind of a permanently crewed facility up there. For what purpose? You know, it's hard to say because it's expensive to go to the moon. Mm-hmm. You got to find ways of saving costs, mm-hmm. which is why fuel out there, like from asteroids, even from the moon itself and elsewhere, is critical to keep it from having to launch everything up from the surface of the Earth at great expense. So,
I'm just reflecting on here we are talking about this after how many years about the moon, and when we went in 1969 for the first time, I thought, man, I'm going to live to see, because I was a relatively young man at the time.
You and me
both. We're going to certainly live to see men and women on Mars for sure. I mean,
somebody in 1969 had asked me, where do you think we'll be by the year 2000? I would have said, on our way to the stars.
Yeah.
Because we went from nothing to the surface of the moon in 8 years. What would we do in another 30 plus?
And here we are 50 years later talking about going back to the moon.
Maybe.
All right. Mark Sykes of the Planetary Science Institute. You can find out more about PSI. Become a member. I'm a member. They do a great job. PSI.edu. Thanks, Mark.
Bill.
All right. Coming up next, Steve Rivera is Eye on the Ball Sports Show on behalf of my great engineer producer, Bob Dio. Thanks, Bob. Another great job. On behalf of Mark Sykes, we wish you have a great afternoon and evening.